They provide quality health-centric building maintenance. They believe the cleaning industry should provide the first line of defense and proper health care, always looking for the right process to provide the highest quality, safest, and most healthy environment for the people involved. They're certified partners in science-proven microbial control, the state-of-the-art protection to keep their environment safer and more healthy for everyone involved. Heritage Building Maintenance, nice to have them be a part of the program. It's nice to have my next guest in. It is David Eicholt. He's at David Eicholt on Twitter. David, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Steen. Things are going well. I appreciate you having me back. And Iowa City is buzzing. Huge opportunity ahead for the Hawkeyes. And it's definitely got one of those big game feels around town right now, I think.
Does having Fox Sports there as big as having ESPN there?
You know, I don't think so, just because of how big College Game Day is and just how much of a staple and cornerstone it's been for college football coverage. But I also would argue that Fox, by the minute, in terms of their pregame programming, by the minute, it's more quality than College Game Day at this point.
I agree with that. If you could just keep Urban Meyer away, I think I'd be happy with that. You know, I can't believe that you can be there, go away, be a big train wreck is what it was, and then automatically just boom, get put right back in there. Because I like Matt Leinart, I love Brady Quinn. I think they do a good job, and they're doing right now, they're selling the one thing at the University of Iowa that is the biggest seller, and that's Caitlin Clark and the Iowa women's basketball team.
No doubt. Yeah, downtown's crazy right now. I know both Iowa men's and women's basketball are doing just kind of an interactive thing with the community right now for the next hour, I believe, on Iowa Avenue. They have a live DJ. They're doing shoot-arounds. They're doing Q&As. They're doing all sorts of stuff. And I think that was a really good move by Iowa just to say, hey, you know what? We have a good basketball program, men's and women's. And these are the type of things that attract big-time recruits. I mean, we've seen over the years, you know, Hoosier Hysteria for Indiana. Kentucky is well-known for doing that stuff. Kansas is doing that stuff. Nebraska basketball, for some reason, is even going crazy right now with their preseason hype. And I think you and I both have about the same expectations for them, which is absolutely zero.
Zero.
But no doubt.
And it hurts me to say that because both ways. I have nothing against Scott Frost, and I love Fred Hoiberg. But I'm sorry. It's just not that Nebraska anymore. So when they're out here and they're trying to convince everybody that they can go get whatever coach they want to, it's just not the same anymore. It's more difficult. And I think they're having a hard time understanding and comprehending that. But I just got done in my last segment saying, I think the bet of the weekend is there is no way that somebody's coming in to Kinnick Stadium and beating Iowa by 10.5. No way.
You know, I'd like to preface my next comment by saying I'm not a financial advisor or a financial expert, but if you talk about free money to me, I'm amazed that Michigan's favor as much as they are. And I'm not saying that as an Iowa reporter, but you just look at the history. Look at what Michigan did last week against Maryland. I mean, they really struggled with Maryland, I think. I wouldn't call it an upset alert because I still think Michigan had control of the game. But J.J. McCarthy, who, by the way, is a phenomenal human being on top of being a really, really good quarterback. I encourage people to go read some stories from the Detroit News about him.
Love him.
But, you know, he's not going to be able to get away with the mistakes that he made against Maryland. You're not going to be able to fumble the ball twice on the same drive. You're not going to be able to take some of those chancy throws. You're not going to be able to hold on to the ball as long as you normally would against this Iowa team because Iowa is so opportunistic. And, you know, Steen, now that we're through, you know, four games of the season, I'm taking a step back and looking at this Iowa team. The offense is the same exact one as last year. But last year, they obviously had Linderbaum, but they were much more opportunistic.
Yes.
And they could create they could take those points off turnovers. And Iowa didn't turn the ball over as much as they have. And I think that's going to be the big, big thing for Iowa. This offense is never going to be good, okay? Right now, it's not a talent issue. It's a scheme issue, among other things. But can they be opportunistic when the defense and Torrey Taylor put you in prime positions to go out there and make plays? And I think that's the area that Iowa needs to continue to grow the most in. And a stat that is just indicative of how bad Iowa is offensively on top of everything else, the lesser-known ones team. Iowa, I believe, has had 52 drives this season. Okay, they've had the ball 52 times. On 5 of those 52 drives, it's lasted more than 4 minutes in time of possession. That's not Hawkeye football.
It is not.
That's just not Iowa football. It's never been.
And the fact that their defense is still doing the same thing is amazing because they're on the field forever. And they're still having the same kind of dominance. And it's the turnovers. I when we talked, and everybody that I talked to, Iowa State is not winning a game against Iowa. Unless, it doesn't matter how many turnovers Iowa State has. They have to turn Iowa over. And they did that, and they won the game. The Michigan's going to be in that same thing. They're probably going to get turned over. So that means they have to turn over. If Spencer Petras and the Iowa offense doesn't have turnovers, I think Iowa wins this game.
I think there's a stat that Greg Schiano, the Rutgers coach, referenced after the game. And I have not fact-checked this, so I'm simply relaying what he said. But Iowa has won 19 straight games when they don't turn the ball over one time. And I think that's probably – that would not surprise me whatsoever. And, you know, Iowa State earned the win. Iowa did nothing to earn the win. So my next comments are not disparaging that win at all. Iowa State did everything to just give Iowa the game.
Oh, yeah,
they
absolutely.
They did everything. And Iowa State pulled it off. And Iowa just couldn't do that. And, again, if you're going up against Michigan, you're not going to be able to get away with some of the things that you got away with in that Iowa game. And looking at this Michigan team, Steen, I think there's a couple things to take note of. One, I still think this Michigan team has the same ceiling as last year. I have some questions about their edge rushers. I have questions about their linebackers. So what does that mean for Iowa's offense? One, I think Iowa needs to have a heavy dose of the outside zone. Don't do inside, go outside. Make the edge rushers contain the edge and give the ball to Caleb Johnson. He is Iowa's best running back to this point. I think LaShawn Williams has the case. Gavin's not hitting the holes as quickly as he has shown in the past. So
still
I think
hurt,
you need to
I think.
Give the big physical guy. And secondly, make those linebackers cover Iowa's tight ends in space. There's going to be crossing routes available. There's going to be seam routes up the middle available. But this Michigan secondary is a bunch of dogs, and I do not expect Iowa to test them deep, especially without Keegan Johnson healthy.
Yeah, and that's one of those things. And I think that they're – because I think they're going to try to make them do that and try to get that work the middle of the field and try to turn Spencer over. And I mean, he has to – you've said this from day one when we talked about football this year. All he has to do, he doesn't have to be great. He has to be a game manager. And he's done that the last couple of weeks against not as good a talent as he's going to see on Saturday. But he can still do it. It's just – it's a mindset, and he has to be ready to do that.
The biggest thing for him – I would even go a step further, Steen, than just be a game manager. He has to make the makeables.
Right.
That's what it's going to come down to for Spencer Petras. And – again, I don't think it's a talent issue for Iowa. I think Iowa showed some signs of positive growth against Rutgers. I think that that first drive in that second half when Iowa ripped off 8 yards, and 21 yards on their first three running plays, I think that's a very good sign. I think LaShawn Williams I think he's going to be a pretty decent number two back. I think that's a ceiling. There's nothing wrong with that. Iowa has had seasons where they have two guys with 1,000-plus yards, and I was happy for him to get a touchdown, you know, obviously the passing of his father the prior week. But Iowa's offensive line is going to be very good in due time. It's all going to depend on how fast they can grow up because they have so much talent. But none of these guys are seniors, Steen. These guys are all – they're all coming back.
Yep.
And I think when you just look at this Iowa team, it's going to be a battle. It's just going to be a physical battle. It's going to be a very stereotypical, low-scoring, very physical football game. And I think Iowa's interior offensive line, it's going to be a big key to this game because guess what? As Kirk Ferentz described, Michigan nose tackle Mazie Smith, he's a refrigerator that can move. 6'2½", 350. Logan Jones and Jangs Dunker, Ellsbury and all those guys, they certainly have a tall task ahead of them.
If you get past Ohio State, who's the second best team in the Big Ten?
Iowa people are not going to like me saying this. I think Minnesota could be the second best team in the Big Ten.
Even better than Penn State.
I do. I think they could be. I think they're better than Penn State. And Minnesota has not been tested, but Tanner Morgan looks like he's returning to that second team All Big Ten caliber quarterback. They play tough at line of scrimmages. They're running the ball incredibly well. Mo Ibrahim has shown no signs of that Achilles injury that ended his season last year. They're good, Steen. I mean, Joel Klatt said it earlier this week, and I thought, I don't think he's crazy. Minnesota could legitimately be that 2015 Iowa team. They could be that 2017 Wisconsin team. They could be 11-1. heading into the Big Ten title game. I mean, it's crazy. The schedule lines up. They obviously have to get through Iowa. They have some curses behind them on that. They have to beat Wisconsin because I don't think Wisconsin is just going to roll over and die after getting killed by Ohio State. I think Michigan's in that conversation, but I don't think you can have a conversation about the second-best team in the Big Ten without Minnesota.
Yeah. You know what? Every once in a while, I know he doesn't – he kind of gets beat up a little bit, but their coach is good. I mean, he has the team. The team never quits. They play hard. And when they have talent, it's tough when you buy into as much as they buy into.
No doubt. And I think, you know, people get distracted by the – people will call it gimmicks. I think it's kind of a gimmick, but I'm not going to blame someone or fault someone for truly embracing what I see as a gimmick. And what I mean by that is PJ Flex over the top, you know, row the boats, Sky Uma, go Gophers, all that extra sort of stuff. He's kind of like he's just like an animated cartoon, right? But he truly buys into what he's preaching. And I think his players see that, and that's why they play so hard for him.
It's been a while, and once again, we're talking to David Eicholt. He's at David Eicholt on social media, and I know it's in the middle of the season, but with the chance that you can go to at least a 12-team playoff might happen before 2026, is the Big Ten, in your mind, done just with USC and UCLA, or are they going to try to go get two more? What's the tea leaves?
No, I think they could get more. I think they can get more than two more.
You think they're going to get four more?
I think they're going to aim to get four more ultimately, right? Yes. I've said from the very start they're going to get Oregon. And I think you and I talked about that, right?
Yep.
I think day after that broke, I said they're going to go after Oregon because Oregon's too big of a brand. They don't want to stay there. There's buzz about Washington, and that doesn't surprise me. I see it as an okay fit. I hate the Stanford fit. I think we already have enough of those kind of schools.
Right, but that's why it's a fit, though, because that's their academic thing that they can go, hey, look.
Exactly.
This is what we did.
I still think it's impossible for Notre Dame not to be in the Big Ten eventually.
I
just don't see how they can convince their boosters that it's a good idea to stay outside the Big Ten.
And this is the one time that I think that, well, number one, and I wanted to get your opinion on this, because you and I were pretty tough on Kevin Warren, Big Ten commissioner,
yep,
during COVID and doing all that. Man, there is nobody, it's the SEC, nobody is pushing the buttons the correct way more than he is. And the one thing that I think that he's doing that's going to help me, because I'm an Iowa State guy and a Big 12 guy, is if he does that and he goes, grabs a couple of others, the Pac-12 is done. And then that makes it easy for Iowa State to go in and take the four that they want, which aren't the same four that the Big 10 wants, because we want a different part of the country. I think that helps. But Kevin Warren, if there's ever been somebody that's bounced back from being the worst player to MVP, that dude is it.
Absolutely zero question about that scene. I mean, I would probably say I was the most very vocal person about how bad I thought he was. And, you know, I stand by every ounce of criticism that I gave him at the time.
But he came back. Yeah.
You have to give him credit. He is doing everything right. I think he stopped trying to force himself as a leader and stopped being vocal about it, Steen. And he's instead, I go back to this Lil Wayne quote, which I think the younger population is going to love. Real G's move in silence like lasagna. He stopped talking. He's making moves. And that's exactly why he's going to be one of the more prominent faces in all of, not just college athletics, but sports in general.
And the really interesting thing, and I can't wait to see how this plays out. If you're going to do a 12-team playoff, that means you're going to have to play some games on a Monday night or a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night to get all those games in. And if you do it during the playoffs, what's the chances that college football moves, okay, we're not just going to do Saturdays and Sundays. We're going to do a Friday every once in a while. We're going to do a Thursday every once in a while. Maybe we're going to do a big game day on Mondays. What's the chances of that happening?
I think that's a very interesting argument. I can tell you that the TV execs will love it. Every single head coach is going to absolutely hate it. They are going to hate it.
I'm okay with that, though.
I know how much it ticks off Kirk Ferentz that they have a one Friday game every few years, because it takes away recruiting.
Right.
And what he says, especially for a community in a state like Iowa, Fridays belong to the high school kids, and I think he has a very valid point.
I agree with the Friday part. I really do, and I do agree with that. But I'm also telling you, if you're on a primetime game on a Monday, Tuesday, or a Thursday, and it's the only game that's on and everybody in the country is watching and you're playing well, there's no bigger recruiting edge than that.
I think that's an interesting point, but I also, just the college football fan in me saying, don't take away yep. Maction Tuesdays, please. That belongs to it. I'd love to see that. But, I agree with you. I mean, at the end of the day, money talks. When they yep. say it's not about money, guess what it's about? It's all
it's
money.
It's always about money, and it always will be. How is the buzz and the excitement in Iowa City for men's and women's basketball?
I think women's, certainly. I think Kylie Feuerbach, with her being out for the year, that's a big blow. But getting Molly Davis, you talk about covering your bases. That was that transfer that was already big seen is that much bigger. I think there's a lot of excitement about the men's team as well. Obviously, I think the expectations are continuing to rise for Chris Murray because we keep hearing buzz about Keegan. I was talking to my buddy Cameron Zalierno, who is the Kings writer for the Sacramento Bee. He talked to Keegan the other day. Keegan stayed after practice. Instead of the media scene, he knocked down 117 of 153s 3 weeks after, being starting to recover from wrist surgery. So there's a lot of buzz about Keegan, and I ultimately think that's reflecting on the Iowa basketball program. I still think they should have gone more aggressive in the portal for a big man or landed one. But Desante Bowen, I think, is going to be in a very prominent role as a true freshman. You have guys like Chris, Peyton Sanford, who I think is going to be a big breakout player, Patrick McCaffrey. I mean, these two teams are going to be very, very fun to watch, and I think that's going to be the most important thing for not even just any diehard fan team, but just the casual basketball fan. They're going to be fun to watch, both of them.
First team all-conference, Patrick McCaffrey. You heard it here. I'm telling you, he might lead the Big Ten in scoring. That's my take, and I'm not taking it away.
If he's consistent, he's got the ceiling to do it.
Buddy, enjoy the weekend. Best to you, best for the Hawkeyes, and we'll talk next week.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Bye-bye. David Eicholt is the best. The best. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day. Beast Styles, Brendan Styles coming in here next.
Live from the capital city, it's Steen on Sports. 1700 The Champ. Real sports talk for real sports fans.
Welcome back in, everybody. Once again, you're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 FM, 1700 The Champ AM. Real sports talk for real sports fans. Check us out on Twitter at 1700 The Champ and at Steen on Sports. Facebook is at 1700 The Champ as well. We get Twins Tigers tonight after the program. First pitch is 6:10, so you're gonna get like the last little bit of their pregame show. This segment is going to be brought to you by DeMoss, Des Moines Orthopedic, helping you get back to living through orthopedic care. They'll take care of your foot, ankle, hand, upper extremity, hip, knee, shoulder, spine, trauma, sport med, urgent injury. They have urgent clinics that you can go online at demos.com. You can see how long the wait time is. That way you're going in and the things that if you have a knee or an ankle, you can go see a specialist in there in their urgent care. They also just purchased Engineered Performance. It's going to tie the orthopedic part of DeMoss has now with the training and correct training and rehabilitation help with Engineered Performance. Two quality programs combining to help all the athletes in this general area. Once again, Des Moines Orthopedic, thank you for being a part of the show. My next guest, he's at the B Styles on Twitter. It is Brendan Styles. B, how you doing, brother?
Doing good. It's been quite a past 48 hours here between Aaron Judge hitting that home run the other night in Toronto and then everything that happened last night in Cincinnati with the Dolphins game and then more specifically what happened there with the injury with Tua. But otherwise, it's going pretty well and it's going to be quite a weekend here with football.
Oh, my goodness. It's going to be really good. And I just had David Eicholt came on, and I asked him, I said, hey, you know what, if Ohio State is the best team in the Big Ten, who's the second best team? And, I mean, didn't even take him a second. He said Minnesota. He goes, I don't know what they're doing, and I don't know how they're doing it, but they're good.
I think they're the best team in the Big Ten West. I don't know if they're the second best team in the Big Ten. I mean, and to be fair, it's the same thing with them that I would say is the issue at Michigan right now, which is who exactly have they beaten up to this point? I mean, you would argue for both teams that their best wins came last week. Now, I suspect, you know, Minnesota playing Purdue this Saturday. It's interesting because Purdue, as you know, is might take the win in the division when the season began. But I'm starting to come around on this, case in point, what I just said about the Gophers. And I would suspect that they're probably going to win that game tomorrow at home. Do I think that they're going to end up being in the Big Ten championship game? Probably. But I think it has more to do with the division they're in more than anything, because if they were in the East, clearly, I don't think they would beat Ohio State. But then again, I also don't know if they'd be good enough to beat Michigan. And let's not forget, they do have to go to Penn State. That is the one tough game that they have on their schedule here over the course of these next couple of months.
Right. Is, in your mind, how in the world are they setting Michigan as a 10.5-point favorite in Kinnick? I mean, they just begging for money. I mean, is that what the
Well, I think it started lower, and it jumped up to Michigan being favored that highly. I think it comes back to – I don't even know if it has so much to do with Michigan. I think it has to do with Iowa, and I think it has to do with the offense, which I know it seems like a broken record, and you don't want to, like, harp on it too much after a win against Rutgers that you kind of expected to play out like it did. But when half of your scoring comes from the defense in that game, and your offense still only gets 13 points against a team like that, that's a little concerning when you're going up against a Michigan team that, granted, you're at home tomorrow, but at the same time, Michigan's going to be full of athletes on that side of the ball. And then you also got to remember, too, this is a rematch of a championship game that was not even close. Now, I don't think tomorrow is going to be anything like what you saw in Indianapolis back in December, but Michigan for sure is the better team going into this game, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do end up covering that number. And I think part of that might have to do with the timing of the game, because everybody's been talking about how, oh, you know, Kinnick is a place where top five teams go to die. All those games are later in the day, they're either mid afternoon or in the evening. This one's an 11 a.m. game, and I do kind of wonder what the environment's going to be like in that stadium tomorrow, just with that in mind.
Yeah, sometimes those early games like that, it throws people off, and you know,
right.
Also having 7 o'clock games throws people off, but for a totally different reason.
Right.
So,
right,
I've been wanting to ask you this, and I didn't ask you last week. Has the Chicago Bears given up on Justin Fields already?
I wouldn't say they've given up on him, but I'm starting to have concerns about him after what I saw against Houston. Like, yes, they won the game, fortunately, and a big part of that was Roquan Smith getting that interception and that led to a game-winning field goal. But he threw a couple of interceptions in that game. He referring to Justin Fields, threw a couple of picks in that game that had me really concerned, because one of them, it didn't even look like he knew where he was throwing the ball. And it's one of those unique circumstances in the sense that he doesn't really have a whole lot around him, which is obvious. I mean, the best receiver on the team has barely been involved, that being Darnell Mooney. Cole Kmet has barely been involved as a tight end. They have a really good running game, but besides that, their pass protection hasn't been all that great. And when he's been able to complete passes, it's normally been checkdowns, whether it be to Montgomery or Khalil Herbert. It's one of those things where you have to acknowledge that he has a hand in the offense as well. Now, I wouldn't give up on him at this point by any means. I think you still have to let the season play out. But it's going to be really tough to evaluate, even if you do upgrade and get the skill guys that you want this team to have a year from now, because then there's going to be even more pressure on him. And frankly, I think a lot of the pressure is being placed on – he's placing on himself. And I think a lot of the issues that you're seeing with him are mental more than anything. And the big concern I have with that was the same thing that you saw with Trubisky. No one ever really questioned his athleticism. It was just what was all in between his ears. And it reached a point where he couldn't handle it, and they ended up not re-signing him. Hopefully Fields, it's a different situation with him, but I'm the warning signs are starting to get there. I will acknowledge that.
Once again, we're talking to Brendan Styles. He's at DB Styles on Twitter. I want to say angry, blame. Who's to blame the most for what we've seen from Sunday till last night with Tua?
Yeah. I think it's whoever is involved in the decision making to let him go back out there. And frankly, I think the NFL plays a role in this too, because if you think about it, okay, today is when they started the investigation into last Sunday.
Right.
Now, why is that a big deal? Because they also played last night. So common sense right there should have told you that if they were going to be looking into this to begin with, that maybe he should be held out until they have come away with some information gathered. But that clearly wasn't the case, and instead they put him out there in harm's way. And, you know, the hit itself, like, it wasn't like a dirty hit or anything like that that happened. It was just something where his head fell exactly like it did on Sunday when he got hit in that game. And it's so unfortunate, because you see this guy, he's finally starting to go into that quarterback that I think many, myself included, thought he was going to be when he was back in Alabama. And now it's just like, should he even play again?
Right,
is the question that I came away with this morning. And, you know, I hope for his sake that he's able to, but it might be in his best interest to, you know, if it gets to a point where he decides he needs to hang it up, I wouldn't fault him.
I wouldn't either. He needs to see what we all saw with his hands. When you see something like that, it should shake you up. And that's what I was thinking.
It did.
Yeah, it shook me up too. And what I'm thinking is, this is when the Miami Dolphins go, if he is our quarterback, and we think he is our quarterback, let him miss a game. Don't let him go out there last night.
No.
Keep him back a couple of games. If he's your franchise, make sure you treat him like he's your franchise.
I agree with that. And there's another angle to this that doesn't necessarily relate too much to Tua and what in the specific injury itself, but just in general. You've seen players be outspoken about Thursday night games.
Yes.
Other than, and look, I realize there's nothing that's going to be done about it because Amazon paid millions, if not billions of dollars to have these. But it's to the point where, other than that first game of the season where you reward whoever won the Super Bowl the previous year and like the Thanksgiving games, there's really no point in having them unless you're going to have something where the team is coming off of a bye week and they have like almost the same amount of time to prepare for that as they would for their following game.
I agree.
Because players, they're not conditioned to only have that many days to recover. You think about in high school, it's once a week. College, it's once a week. The NFL, that's how it should be. But it isn't. And unfortunately, it has to do with money being the reason why. So it's not going to change. But that's an angle that I think really needs to be reexamined, because it's something that I feel like the Players Association kind of got forced into in order to get certain things that they wanted in collective bargaining. Is, okay, they had to agree to a 17th game, they had to agree to having these Thursday night games.
Yeah. And the other one, just to throw another one in, Brennan Staley saying,
sure,
the reason that Justin Herbert was in on a game that they were down 38-10 is because, well, he wanted to be on the field. Dude, you're the coach. He's your franchise. Sit his butt down.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be one of those things where, like, if it's not going to be the head coach, there has to be somebody on the sidelines that has the wherewithal to just go up and be like, this guy can't play.
Right. Get him out of here.
This can't play. And you go back to what happened with Tua, not even what happened last night, what happened on Sunday, yes, against Buffalo. His offensive linemen were trying to hold him up when they saw that he was woozy and was starting to fall and couldn't, like, keep his balance. That should have been a clue right there. It's like, okay, maybe he has no business going back in this game.
What Aaron Judge has done this season in baseball, yeah, where does that put him in the echelon of what we think of home run hitters for you?
I think he's the best home run hitter currently, and it's something that he might – become the best home run hitter of his generation. But,
and he's a free agent.
Yeah, I've been struggling with this. I've been struggling with this because, like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to disregard his milestone, because it's an incredible feat to get to that many home runs in a season, you know? So I don't want to diminish anything that he's accomplished. But to me, like, I'm also not going to, as somebody who was a kid during those years, I'm not going to sit there and pretend that what I saw with Sosa and McGuire and with Barry Bonds. I'm not going to pretend that that didn't happen.
Right.
You know, and yes, you can be, you know, upset about how steroid use was rampant in the game at that time, but you could also make the argument that pitchers were using it as well.
Yes.
And at that point, who's really at an advantage? So it's one of those things. And I've been somebody who's always believed that Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame, and I think it's a sham that he's not.
I agree.
And I would still personally acknowledge his records, even if he wasn't the greatest guy or greatest teammate, or, you know, because what you saw with him, there were guys, they were willing to walk him with the bases loaded. How many players could you say that about?
Zero. Zero players.
Exactly.
And that's the thing.
You're not seeing that with Aaron Judge.
No, and here's the other, and baseball turned a blind eye to it. The national media turned a blind eye to it. Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire saved baseball. Baseball was on, it was dead.
Absolutely.
And they would jump into newscasts to show their at-bats.
I mean, if I could bring a Chicago perspective onto that, not only did they bring baseball back, but with Sammy Sosa in particular, he filled a void like almost immediately that was about to be left behind by Michael Jordan, because that was right at the very end of the Bulls dynasty.
Yep.
When Sammy was starting to pick it up on his end with the home runs, and he ended up getting 66 out here. And not only that, but the Cubs ended up making a wild card. I think that's the other aspect of it as well. Yeah, the Cardinals didn't have a great year when McGuire was hitting 70, but the Cubs were in the thick of a playoff race, and it came down to an extra 163rd game, ironically against San Francisco. That allowed them to make the postseason that year.
Yeah,
so I think it's something that he made the Cubs relevant beyond just being on WGN and being a team that played at Wrigley Field.
That's why Major League Baseball is such a joke, because they bought into it until they couldn't keep the Senate in that and all the things that they were fighting about. They couldn't keep them away, and they thought, okay, we're just going to throw them right. Sosa and Mark McGuire, and maybe they'll let us go, even though they're the ones that were pushing it.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, like I said, it's great what Aaron Judge is doing. I'm happy for him. I think he's clean as far as I could tell. He looks like the same guy he was when he came up with the Yankees, so I'm not going to be one to question that. But at the same time, like, I'm not going to also sit here and be like, okay, yeah, sure, he had the American League record. But even that, you have interleague play now, and next year you're going to have it be something where you play every team. How much does that really matter?
It doesn't. And it's just a way. I mean, he's marketable. I get that. And he's going to be a free agent. I think that's a big thing too. Yeah, no doubt. So give me your, what do you think the score is for the Iowa Michigan game?
I said 23-7 Michigan. I think it's going to be one of those games that it'll look close, but it's not going to really ever feel in doubt. And I think the big part of that is I don't really see Iowa's offense being able to bode well against Michigan, because I'm just basing that off of what I've seen to this point this season.
Yeah, Michigan, they're gonna mix things up. They're gonna make it difficult for Spencer as well. Be as always. So the next 2 weeks, we're gonna have you in on Thursday. So everybody, take note of that right now. I appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
All right, sounds good. Talk to you next Thursday.
All right, bye bye. B Styles, he's the best as well. You're listening to Steen on Sports. One segment left. 101.3 FM, 1700 The Champ AM.
101.3 FM and 1700.
Welcome back in, everybody. You're listening to Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 FM, 1700 The Champ AM, Real Sports Talk for real sports fans. Check us out on Twitter at Steen on Sports and at 1700 The Champ. Facebook's at 1700 The Champ. The website is 1700thechamp.com. We get Twins Tigers tonight right after the game. UNI Indiana State tomorrow, 3 o'clock pregame. And Vikings Saints, that starts 8 a.m. pregame. And then you're going to have Commanders, Cowboys, Broncos, Raiders, Chiefs, Buccaneers. That's your Sunday. And then Monday, Rams, 49ers. Some big time games out there. So be ready for that. Want to take the time to say thank you to the sponsors of the show. Des Moines Orthopedic Heritage Building Maintenance, Woodman Controls, iCubs, Northwest Bank, Palmer Group, Come and Go. You heard some Come and Go commercials during the show today, as well as BetMGM. We'll talk a little bit about having some bets on some games coming up this weekend. So we'll take a look at that. One of the bigger games before I say that, I want to thank Brendan Stiles and David Eicholt for coming in. It's great to have them, especially on a Friday, to get to talk. David thinks, I mean, Iowa City's blowing up. I think David thinks it's going to be a closer game than what B does. We'll see which way that goes. I think 10.5 points is a lot of points, but, I mean, you don't know. When you don't have consistency on one side of the ball in over the first four or five games, it's just hard to pick games. It's hard to put point spreads down. I get it, and it'll be interesting. One of the biggest games of the weekend in the NFL is two teams that have two what I consider to be once-in-a-lifetime quarterbacks. You get lucky every once in a while, and they've handled them. I mean, you couldn't. They've handled each one of them a 180 from how each other has done that. So far this year, right now, Josh Allen is 94 for 132, 1,014 yards, 9 touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown, and 2 interceptions. Lamar Jackson is 56 for 88, 749 yards passing, 10 touchdown passes, 2 rushing touchdown passes, 2 interceptions. He's like in the rushing game, he is like 4th or 5th in the NFL in rushing, and he's the quarterback. I mean, two teams, two really good football teams. It's going to be what a game. And I don't even know if we're getting that game. And in the NFL part of this, with the Minnesota Vikings, you're getting that game first, the Minnesota Vikings and the New Orleans Saints. I thought Kirk Cousins had a good bounce back game. He didn't play well the week before. It happens. I think it's understandable. I still think Kirk Cousins is going to have a better, he might have his best year, just getting away from some of the old things. And I think New Orleans is just a mess right now. Jameis Winston is kind of, I think he's injured. I think he's not at full strength, and it just brings back when you have to take a part of your game day mental, you know, just I'm trying to think of the right word, but you have to take and put all your focus on football, and he's hurt. And he has to put half of that on trying to get through being hurt and still trying to get through. And that doesn't bode well for him. There's some interesting games. That Bills-Ravens game, I think, is extremely. Right now, Buffalo is a 3-point favorite. The over-under is 51. The Bears-Giants, I mean, that's a crazy game. The biggest talk on ESPN this week on 2 or 3 different shows is the utter disaster that the New York Giants front office was, pretty comparable to the abstract just mess that the Las Vegas Raiders were with Mike Mayock and John Gruden. I mean, they've set these organizations back 4 or 5 years. You're not bouncing back from that. You're not bouncing back from, like, 5 of the 6 draft picks of the Las Vegas Raiders are no longer playing. They're no longer in the NFL. And the Giants, I mean, they took things. The New York Giants and the Raiders were always getting picked on in these drafts because they didn't know what they were doing. And when we talked earlier this week on this show, it's a combination. You have to have good ownership. And the biggest team that struggles with that, if we want to look at it, is the Dallas Cowboys. Because ownership means ownership. And to Jerry Jones, ownership means I can do whatever the heck I want to do. And if he was allowed to go down and coach, he probably would do it. I'm talking about ownership that understands that, yes, I'm an owner. And I understand what my role is. I want to be kept up to date, but I'm hiring a general manager. I'm hiring a coach. I'm hiring, you know, those two people to take care of my football operations. I'm here to make sure that we have a crowd, that we have ticket sales, that we sell out our suites, and then we take care of our big donors so we can continue down the road what we're doing. A lot of teams don't even have that. The teams that are successful do. And that's the starting point, right? Then you have to have a good general manager. You have to have a good coach. You have to have a quarterback that you can win football games with. And in order to do that, you also have to have, even if you have a defensive coach, which, by the way, I have no idea in the world why you do that now, as important as the quarterback is. If you're wanting to hire a coach, you hire an offensive mind, and then if you want to be in and you want to help hire the defensive coach, so if you have a very gung-ho offensive guy, he has to know that the defensive coach is exactly, he has power. But hiring a defensive coach that wants to run a defensive scheme and they think that they can win games with the defense, you don't win games. There's no more Chicago Bears. There's no more Baltimore Ravens, where the defense, they didn't care what the offense did because they knew they were going to win football games because of their defense. It doesn't exist because it can't. And people go, well, why can't it? Well, here's the reason why. Because right now on the great teams, they have 4, 5, or 6 people that can catch a football. And you don't have 4, 5, or 6 people to defend. And there's no way that you can get to the quarterback. If you have the best front 7 in football, doesn't mean you're going to get to the quarterback enough to stop him from scoring. That's the way football is. And it's being guided that way because as much as it was fun to watch the Chicago Bears defense and the Baltimore Ravens defense, no one wants to watch that on TV that's not a fan of the team. They want to see football, and they want to see it at a highest level and offensively. People don't turn in to watch defensive football games, just like they don't care if people play defense in the NBA. I always hear, well, he didn't even guard him when he went in for that dunk. Nobody cares. Everybody wanted to see the dunk. Well, they don't guard from the three-point line. Nobody cares. People just want to see them shoot from half court and make them. When does defense matter? Playoffs. When does it even matter the most? In the conference championship and in the NBA championship, you have to have the ability to play defense. That's why the Denver Nuggets probably are never going to get there. That's why the Dallas Mavericks are never going to get there. That's why the Golden State Warriors changed the way they played basketball in order to get where they were at, because they knew they had to be, they didn't have to be the best defense, but you had to be in the top 15. You have to be able to keep the number of points down to a fact that even on an off night, you can still score more because they can all score. That's the way it is in football right now. I mean, there is nobody out there that wants to see a 10-9 game. Nobody. I don't want to see games in the pouring rain. I don't want to see games in snow. It's football in the NFL. I want to see it at the highest level. I enjoyed watching my Baltimore Ravens when they had a great defense, but boy, it was painful. And so were the Chicago Bears, except for there were times they still had Walter Payton. They had the ability. Willie Gault, they had the ability to score. They just weren't the top scoring team, but they didn't have to. You look at some of these games this weekend, the Browns and Falcons. I mean, it's a snooze fest. I think the Jaguar-Eagles could be one of the best games of the weekend, and it may not even be close because the Eagles may be that good. The Bills-Ravens is great. The Bears-Giants, oh my goodness, are you kidding me? The Chargers-Texans, Justin Herbert's not healthy. Bleh. The Jets-Steelers, bleh. The Seahawks-Lions, at least the Lions are fun to watch. The Titans and the Colts, bleh. The Commanders and the Cowboys, bleh. The Cardinals and the Panthers, even worse. The Broncos and the Raiders, even worse. Patriots and Packers, it gets your interest again. The Chiefs and Buccaneers, it gets your interest again. The Rams and 49ers, the same. And the Dolphins and Bengals last night, even though it wasn't the greatest offensive display last night, it still had the capability of being that. And that's what people want to see. That's why it's so hard, you know, with DirecTV and you get these games. Who wants to watch them? Unless you're a fan of that team, nobody wants to watch a game that's going to be 21-17 or 12-9. NFL is going to kill itself, which is impossible because of the amount of money that's bet on it. So that keeps it. And that's the reason a lot of people don't care, is because of the betting aspect. Thank you very much for this week. We had a blast. It's Steen on Sports, bringing sports your way every day right here on 101.3 FM, 1700 The Champ AM. See you on Monday. What can we expect?
Here's a look at traffic on 101.3 and 1700.